From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Jeffrey Smith's powerful documentary, The English Surgeon, is the story of Henry Marsh, a British neurosurgeon who twice a year travels to Ukraine to do surgery and to diagnose what seems like an endless stream of people caught in a broken medical system. Medicine is a powerful metaphor for the themes that make their way through the film. Marsh himself is haunted by the decision he made years ago to treat a Ukrainian girl, and it makes him question his tactics and motives.
I have been swayed by emotion. But it's so very difficult to cross to the other side of a street. It's so very difficult to say no.
Jeffrey Smith, the director, is coming to Utah later this week to screen his film. Today in the program, he'll join us. We hope you will too, after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The margins of brain surgery are razor thin and the stakes are incredibly high. The British neurosurgeon Henry Marsh understands all of this, of course, and in the documentary film The English Surgeon, he puts it all in perspective as he discusses his decision of whether to operate on a man from rural Ukraine.
It's a bit like Russian roulette with two revolvers, and you've got one revolver called treatment or surgery, and the other revolver which is no treatment. And you have, it's like that for the patient, and you have to decide which to go for. Marion's epilepsy is caused by a brain tumour, which ultimately will kill him if it's not removed. He's been told in Ukraine it's inoperable. I think I can save him, but there's a very real risk I could wreck him in the process.
Henry Marsh has been traveling to Kiev in Ukraine twice a year for 16 years now to do surgeries and offer diagnoses for the desperate people who queue up in the corridor of a clunky medical clinic. In 2007, the filmmaker Jeffrey Smith traveled along with Marsh. His film is a portrait of him, a man driven by an impulse to do something, but constantly questioning the system, his decisions, and his own motives. Jeffrey Smith is coming to Utah this week to screen his film, The English Surgeon. And today in the program, he's joining us to talk about the film and the themes in it. We invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Producer and director Jeffrey Smith has made more than 22 films for the BBC, ITV, and others. The English Surgeon aired on the BBC last year. It's won awards at festivals around the world. He's going to be coming to Utah this weekend for a screening. We'll tell you more about that as we go along. Right now, Jeffrey Smith is joining us from a studio in Los Angeles, California. And Jeffrey Smith, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, Doug.
I wanted to ask you, first of all, tell us how you met Henry Marsh. How did you come to know him?
The BBC asked me back in 2002, I think it was, to make one of three films about surgeons. And I was late coming onto the project, so I said to the boss, I said, look, just tell me who's the most interesting man. He'd been out meeting them all. I think he'd met something like 60 of them around the country. And I said, look, who's the most human one? Who's the most vulnerable one, really? Mm. And he said, without a doubt, oh, Henry Marsh, without a doubt. So Henry was in London next day or the day afterwards. I went to see him. And it was one of those fateful meetings where I saw in this man somebody who was understandably brilliant at what he did, but what was much more attractive to me was he struggled mm-hmm. with that eternal sort of dilemma about doing good things. How and why do we do those things? And he was trusting enough initially to sort of let me into that world. So I found an ideal character. And as we got to know each other very, very well over a lot of long nights and some vodka, we also discovered we had a love of Ukraine, both of us, for very different reasons. Had been going out there for well over a decade. And I think in a sense that was it was fate. It was honestly sealed in that first couple of weeks of meeting him that this film would be made at some point.
Hmm. Well, it all began, as I mentioned there, for Henry Marsh in the Ukraine something like 16 years ago now. Went to Kiev to give a series of lectures. Henry Marsh, in the film, The English Surgeon, talks about that experience. This was in 1992. Here's another scene from the film.
I was seeing medical problems the like of which have not really been seen in the West for...
There's the bone flaps got displaced. There's a bit
at that time, maybe for 50 or 60 years. It was like going back in a time machine. And I remember talking to a Ukrainian doctor, and I said, oh, I'd like to help. You know, he said, it's a waste of time. It's a, anything you do is a drop in the ocean. It's, you know, the whole system will have to change. Basically, go away. You can't help. And I remember feeling, well, actually, no. I mean, I'm not going to accept that. I can't really respect myself if having seen so much suffering. Surely I can do something to help. And then by chance, the next day, I met Igor.
We're going to talk about Igor as we go along. But Jeffrey Smith, what... how much is Henry Marsh influenced by his own experience? He doesn't talk about this in the film, but we should say he had a son who was diagnosed with a brain tumor.
That's correct. Yes, I mean it was something I thought we'd always get into the film, believe it or not. But in the end, it just sort of got pushed away. Henry was a general surgeon. He trained in surgery, and his son, who's now 28. Had a brain tumor when he was, I think, somewhere between 18 months and 2 years old. And like any parent, Henry was just that. He was no longer a surgeon. He wasn't even someone who had an intimate knowledge of things. He was just a very, very worried parent walking the streets of London waiting for the outcome of his son's operation. And bizarrely, I think the man who did the operation, Henry himself, has actually operated on that man's daughter recently. So things go around in circles. Mm. But it was the complexity of neurosurgery, and dare I say, the risk that once his own son was all right, he looked into it and he found in that discipline the sort of challenge he needs. I think it's he actually describes it as risk-seeking rather than risk-averse. And most of us, for good reasons, are risk-averse individuals. But neurosurgeons, pretty much by definition, have to be risk-seekers. In his own colorful way, Henry describes it as riding a bike down a hill with no brakes. And it really is like that. I've seen tens of operations with Henry. The drama and the unexpected consequences of operating on a brain are truly sort of frightening. And I think it's that deep, deep, deep moral responsibility that he has that invests the man with so much care so much distress and dilemmas about when to operate. Because that's the biggest decision of all. What do we do and how do we do it? Mm.
It seems a very important part of understanding Henry Marsh that he loves to work with his hands. As we see, he does woodwork. You yourself have described him as firstly an artist and then a surgeon.
He's his most relaxed when he's out in his shed making furniture. He's got a vast quantity of tools. He loves sharpening his Japanese chisels and all these sort of indulgent things, which is a major theme in the film because both he and Igor are like little kids, really, who have a love of instruments. And yet, of course, we all know that is actually the stock in trade of what he does. And the film opens with a delightful scene of him relaxing, making up a box in his back garden to ship some equipment to Igor. And the perceptive viewer will notice that he draws a circle on a piece of wood, which he then drills a hole in. But probably an hour later in the film, the very same pen is used to draw a circle on Marion's brain, Marion's skull. So there is a direct connection between these things. And it's a beautiful, playful way into the man's character, really.
You know, I have to say, I actually liked the fact that we don't hear Henry talking about his son. And it's interesting in some ways. We don't we get a glimpse of his wife, but we don't get much of his life in London, his personal life in London.
No.
Was that a conscious choice or did it happen that way? Because it's quite effective. At least for me, it worked.
Yeah, no, it's extremely conscious decision. The problem one always has with this type of film is that naturally we as an audience are drawn to the patients because 99.99% of us, of course, are patients. We're not naturally surgeons. And the other thing is that people in conventional documentaries seem to want to go into the private lives of the surgeons or the characters. I'm very, very acquainted with his private life, but the decision was to always move away from the detail and try and concentrate on the moral fable. I mean, that's really what the film is. It's clearly designed to do that, and it's clearly designed to center us in his world, not to spend time with the patients or not anything out of what's necessary. So that's a very conscious decision because it keeps forcing us into his universe, and that's the one I want us to inhabit. That's where the central message of the film is, which is one man's struggle to do good things. So it's much more effective, and I'm glad you picked up on that because often people say, well, we don't know anything about him. Well, I say, well, ultimately, we don't really need to know.
Right.
What we need to do is live that world that he inhabits, because then the audience itself makes up its own mind. We have much richer experience because we're filling in the gaps as we go.
We see in the film, I made an allusion to these people who are waiting in queue in the corridor of these clinic waiting to see Henry Marsh. And their faces are such a powerful part of the story. And it seems that medicine is this kind of powerful metaphor, this question, as you said, of when you do something and how you go about it. The question of hope is an important one, too. And I wanted to play another excerpt from the film. This is a scene where Henry Marsh is telling – Igor is with him here translating – telling the grandmother of a child that her granddaughter, a grandchild, has less than a year to live. Nothing can be done. It's an inoperable tumor. And let's just play the scene and maybe we could talk a bit about it because it's a remarkably powerful, almost a kind of a heartbreaking scene. Here's another moment from the English surgeon.
I would judge that tumour to be inoperable, basically. I mean, it's in the brain stem, it's all in the pons. And I'm afraid the child has less than a year to live.
Ребенку ничего, ничто не поможет. Это умирание.
But obviously, as parents and as grandparents, we find it very, very difficult to do nothing. It's very
hard. Трудно что-то говорить родственникам или говорить даже
или что-то пытаться.
So what to do? Something to do.
My opinion is there is nothing to do but wait for the child to die.
С моей точки зрения ничего не надо делать.
Ничего не надо делать.
Надо делать.
Life can be very cruel.
Jeffrey Smith, we see Henry Marsh saying things like that, and then he says, "It's the most sort of inadequate thing to say, but I'm sorry." As the woman gets up to leave, and he delivers it in such a matter-of-fact way, but it's almost as if you can see past his eyes into the pain of all of that. I think that's a really powerful moment. Do you want to say something about that?
For listeners as opposed to viewers, it's perhaps more difficult because much of that scene is played on the face of people. And as you say, the words perhaps sound inadequate or trite even. But in both faces, there's a great deal going on. And the grandmother, indeed, when she does get up, she thanks them for their time, which is probably one of the most heartbreaking moments in the film. She's so sincere that someone's listened to her, and even though the news is, of course, tragic, she's still thankful for that opportunity. I think we have to probably understand, which is what the film tries to show you, that these people, neurosurgeons, are dealing with cases like this close to on a daily basis. And it means that they generate a great deal of maturity and, dare I say, truth in how they communicate that to their patients. The whole question of hope is something that, that we'll probably get onto in a minute, because there's a scene where that's questioned, and the idea of what you leave people with is questioned. Mm. But Henry has to balance the idea of truth with people as against the idea of depriving them of hope. In this case, he feels obviously that it's better to go down the road of telling the person what's going on. Indeed, she's only a relative rather than the person herself. But it shows you, all of a sudden, it's the first very serious moment in the film, and it really puts us directly into this emotional cauldron. That's perhaps the best way to describe it, that he inhabits. And by doing that, I want us to be in that same place. I want us to try and understand what it's like to have to wrestle with those decisions.
Jeffrey Smith is with us. He directed and produced The English Surgeon. This coming Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, Smith will be on hand for a free screening followed by a question and answer session. There's going to be a second screening on Monday night at 7. Both of those events are going to be taking place at the Salt Lake City Public Library. For information, you can call the Salt Lake City Film Center or just go to our website at kuer.org/Radio West. We invite you to join the conversation if you like. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We're going to take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling an extraordinary documentary film. It's powerful and touching at moments. It's heartbreaking. It's the story of the British brain surgeon Henry Marsh, who was driven by this impulse to do something. And he has spent years traveling to the country of Ukraine. But at every turn, he finds impossible conditions, bureaucratic inefficiencies, incompetence. The filmmaker Jeffrey Smith is coming to Utah this week to screen the film and to talk about it. Today in the program, he's joining us. We invite you to join us if you like. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Jeffrey Smith, I wanted to talk about this remarkable relationship of Henry Marsh and Igor Kuraletz. Did I pronounce that properly?
Absolutely.
It should be said, in some ways, the film is very much about Igor as well. It's also a profile of him. I wanted to play another scene from the film where Igor is anticipating yet another arrival of his friend Henry Marsh, and in some ways, this seems to reveal the nature of their relationship.
Today's Henry coming, and our favorite topic. It's what is the meaning of the life? What to do? Is it means to become a professor, or to means to become a minister of the public health service, or it is better to be a good doctor? Just to be a good doctor. To see patients every day, to listen to them and try to help them.
Jeffrey Smith, they're always working out these two, it seems like, the sort of the ethical questions at the heart. I mean, and it's the important dynamic of the relationship, I suppose.
Henry said, I mean, in order to keep going out to a place like Ukraine, in order to keep up what is an enormous sort of financial and logistical effort on his part, completely unaided by anybody else or any organization, really at the heart of why he goes is the obvious thing that he can change things. But also, most importantly, it's a deep friendship with Igor. Mm. And his Henry's main concern, whether he's teaching students in London or Seattle, where he's an honorary professor, is to instill in them this question of moral responsibility. He says, the operating itself is relatively easy. What isn't easy is when and how to decide what to do. So Henry's always thrusting onto Igor that question, you know, what do we do here? When do we do things? What is this patient's quality of life now? Is it going to be better or worse if we choose to operate? So he's instilled in his student, and that's really what Igor is. He's a very willing student. He's a very, very diligent student. Mm. But that's another one of Henry's success stories, is that, you know, he's bringing those dilemmas first and foremost into the equation.
And Igor helps us get a sense of just what kind of a bureaucratic environment all of this is. I mean, there's this terrific scene where Igor is negotiating with what seems to be an administrative secretary there at this hospital. He's essentially renting this space, and he's asking the discounts, and she's saying, look, I'll do what I can, but, you know, we can't do this for free. The staff need to be paid. Talk a little bit about the environment in which he has to do all of this.
Well, it's just one of those enormously comic and profound ironies, which is half the reason why I love the country so much over there, is that Igor comes from a sort of politically dissident type of family. And when he first met Henry, he decided he wanted to improve medicine, and the only way to do that was to align himself with the West and new techniques, modern techniques, dare I say. But of course, the old guard was still in charge of the health system at the time. And when he came back from England, he just encountered this increasingly hostile wave of criticism. Then his staff was fired, his things were taken away, he was fired. And he even, in the end, had death threats. And he was sleeping in a different room every night. And that's because by aligning himself with Henry, he was implicitly criticizing the Ukrainian system. Now, the free press that was burgeoning in the mid-90s in Ukraine turned them into heroes. And also word of mouth got out that patients were actually being cured rather than dying, as they probably would have done if they'd been to the state institution. So together they were rescued. Otherwise they could have been crushed. There's no question about it. The state would have won. So they come from a background where they've had to cobble together clinics and equipment, which Henry's often sort of smuggled in or driven in or whatever. And now, the irony of ironies is that the very rooms they rent are right inside the KGB hospital.
Right.
Now, I mean, this is just so, it's quite hard to convey to any audience. But if I said to you, look, you know, here we are right in the middle of the CIA hospital,
right,
you would begin to understand just what it means to get access to that place. And the bizarre truth is that the smart men who run the KGB, or as it's now called the SBU, they understand that the whole political, social situation in Ukraine's changed. It's a market economy. And what they need to do is to make money. So they see in Igor and Henry very successful surgeons. And, of course, they think, if we bring them in and let them rent rooms, the patients who come will help fund our hospital. And that's exactly what happens. Those patients in that corridor are all non-KGB family people, of course, and they're paying their way inside the hospital. Marion, for example, has to raise money to come, and all that money is going to the KGB, which is an irony of ironies, because just as little as 3 or 4 years ago, the very people who ran the hospital would have been highly critical of people like Igor. But that's the Ukraine. It's a roller coaster of humor, farce, comedy, and tragedy all mixed up together. So it's very, very, very raw, and the need, therefore, that both of them feel is to have their own place. That's why there's a scene in the film where they're trying to raise money and trying to build a new clinic on the outskirts of the city.
But of course, the juxtaposition to all of this is there's no preaching on your part about the perfection of Western medicine, because we see that Henry Marsh himself is mired in the bureaucracy of the National Health Service. He himself, and it almost seems more complicated than what Igor is going through at times.
Indeed. I mean, look, there's another line in the film which we couldn't get in the end, but when Henry first went out to Kiev, he saw a man absolutely crushed by this monolithic Soviet bureaucracy, Igor, and he was unable to do anything. There was no equipment and nothing worked. Basically, over the 16 years that they've been going out, Igor's situation's improved. He's now become this independent professional who runs his own clinic, is hoping to build his own hospital, and in many ways literally does everything himself. He employs his own staff, he fixes things. Henry, by comparison, when he first went out, thought he was the independent Western professional,
right,
in charge of his own clinics and in charge of what he does. He's seen that autonomy collapse over the 15 years to the point where he would say their roles are reversed. He would say he's now the absolute victim of a sort of Soviet-style bureaucracy inside the NHS. And that scene with the computer just underlines the absurdity of a talented man having to fill out forms instead of actually working where he should be in an operating theatre.
What kind of reaction are you getting to that part of the film? I mean, I see this question come up from time to time in some of the reviews of the film, the question of what you're saying about socialized medicine. And it's not a screed. It's not really a commentary about it. It's just a reflection of it. But what do you make of the question and the fact that people sort of, especially now, are paying a lot of attention to this part?
Yeah, I mean, no healthcare system is perfect, but what has happened tragically to institutions like the NHS and indeed the BBC is that this virus, which is perhaps the best way to describe it, called management consultancy, sort of swept through institutions like that in the 90s in the UK, having done the same here in the US probably 5 or 10 years before, and has left us, has bequeathed us this legacy of a bloated management system, which is an end in itself. You have meetings about meetings. You have managers to manage other managers. And the actual spend on the ground in terms of efficiency, in terms of time operating, has declined. So, of course, Henry is one of those people who simply and utterly puts patients first. He has no truck or no time for politically correct discussions about this, that, and the other. He just simply sees the need as a surgeon to do as much as he can. And in that way, he finds a release for that in the Ukraine. There's no delay. There's no forms. There's nothing. It is a direct, it's the raw Wild West again, where you could do something straight away. And of course, he's increasingly mired, as I said, in the NHS system, and therefore he feels he rediscovers his love of surgery by going out to the Ukraine.
Well, and then you get this, we sort of come around, we saw him in the shed playing working with tools, and then we see him in a market with Igor in the Ukraine, buying, amongst all the screws and tools and bits, buying material that Igor can use for brain surgery. And then they're sitting at this table and he pulls out these perforators, essentially these drill bits. And they're, like you said, they're like boys in a candy shop. But he's reflecting on the waste, the inefficiency that these perforators that he got from the National Health Service in London, they're only used once, where Igor can use a drill bit like that for something like 10 years.
That's right. I mean, it although it's dressed up in a playful scene, the message is extremely serious there. I mean, we cannot, as Western societies, go on indulging in this profoundly wasteful way. I mean, medical equipment's made to a very high standard, hospital-grade equipment. It has to be that way. But, of course, any company that's going to make something that lasts for life is going to go out of business really quickly unless they come up with a way to force, really, hospitals to buy new equipment. And that steel bit there will last for a lifetime, but it's coated with a plastic ring, which means it can't be sterilized because the plastic will melt. So what they're trying to do at that table is to saw off the plastic ring so that they can get around this problem of sterilizing it. Likewise with the drill. Henry's drill, which we see earlier in the film, is £30,000. It's probably about $50,000. Out in the Ukraine, he's happy for Igor to use one that costs $50 because in the end, it does the same thing. And it's a very much a needs-must society. If you can get by on that, then you will. They get by on having Marion awake for the entire operation, which is quite stunning in all sorts of ways. But that's what I love and what audiences love, is that here's a man who's simply not going to be deterred by logistical difficulties.
Let's talk about Marion. Introduce us a bit more, if you would, to Marion, because he has the most... I think you used the word saint-like face. It's just the face himself, and we see so much close. It's kind of a we get to know him certainly as he speaks, but it's more when he doesn't that seems to convey something powerful about him. Talk about Marion, if you would.
Marion was – I heard about Marion through one of Igor's junior doctors, indeed the young man who takes him up to the operating theatre. And this young doctor said to me, look, you should go to see Marion. He said his village is very poor. He said this is a typical Ukrainian story. He's got a tumor. He's an epileptic because of it. It's deemed to be inoperable. But he's heard about Henry and Igor. So his village is helping him raise the money to come, because Marion himself, in a sense abandoned by his parents and also without work, is living in a he's living in a house with no heating at all, other than the fire he can sort of barely put together on some nights. So it sounded very attractive, and particularly it became so when Henry saw his scans and said to me, look, this perhaps is the first time we can do an awake craniotomy in the Ukraine, and therefore teach Igor as well. So I went down to see Marion with my production manager, and we simply fell in love with him. He's he has cats, which I adore, and it is in his faith, in his religious faith, but also in this way, in this faith that he puts into a man he's never met, he's going to save his life, or at least try to, that I just felt, you know, I was in the presence of someone profound, and someone who is able on his face and his demeanor to express that. And the film revolves so much around the love and the care that characters have for one another. I mean, it starts with Marion stroking his cat, his neighbor, who doesn't say virtually anything in the film, Stanislav, accompanies Marion to Kiev, is there simply because there's a man in need who happens to be his neighbor. And that beauty, that sort of trust is reflected right the way through between Igor and Henry and the like. So Marion, for me, was the most beautiful and yet the most tragic way to paint Ukraine. He becomes the Ukraine. He becomes somebody in need, but someone who's trusting and someone who's very good in his soul. So we said, absolutely, if you would let us participate in this, we would be very, very happy. And I think, like most patients, Marion thought that by letting us film, it would make the doctors more it would help make the doctors focus on their job so that they wouldn't make mistakes. But he's delightful, and as I said, he's very representative of what I think are the most beautiful things about the country.
And there's this, of course, that underlying sense of tension in the film that sort of goes throughout, related to the risks of this kind of surgery and the question of whether, in fact, to act. Here's another scene from the film. This is Igor talking about Marion and what he calls a moral responsibility.
Surgery, it's a risky business, but neurosurgery, it is 100 times more risky business. Marianne came to our office. He is more or less okay, but he can be disabled, totally disabled, tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. And it will be our wrong decision. That's a responsibility. That's a moral responsibility.
The surgery, Jeffrey Smith, the experience itself, is one of the most tense moments for the audience. When you're, and I guess we should explain, there's drilling into a skull and sawing through, and we're incredibly tense during that. I mean, there's a kind of drama there that's extraordinary. Maybe talk about that moment in the film. It's kind of the culmination of all of this, and we're on the edge of our seat, and you're just, I don't know, it's an incredibly nerve-wracking experience.
Yeah, perhaps I shouldn't give it away, but here's a man who's awake, and he has to be awake because, in a sense, the ingenuity of the operation depends on the surgeon being able to check that he's not damaging the patient's motor system or his ability to move his arms and legs. So this is I think it was originally invented by an American, that technique. But of course, in the West, the patient's asleep for the carpentry, as Henry calls it, of actually extracting the flap of bone that they need to get into the brain. Here, they don't have that sort of sophistication. So Marion has to be awake throughout that entire operation. And it's a skillful piece of psychological distraction on Henry's part, because he sits next to Marion at that point. And he's in a way, talking about all and sundry and basically trying to get him to sort of think about other things, whilst Igor is upstairs literally drilling into his head and sawing out the bone flap. Henry's successful, very successful in his job, not least because Marion, as I said before, has this beautiful faith in what's happening, but also because Henry's making him laugh. And the situation becomes ludicrous when the drill battery fails. Just at the right time, though. They've just managed to get the holes done they need. So you enter into this sort of surreal fascination. And although we've had something like 13 people faint across the screenings that I've at least attended, most people are forced to continue watching because if Marion's awake, they should at least be able to watch. And you want so much to know what's happening. You want to look into Marion's eyes and you want to see and understand how this surreal medical drama is going to end. Because, as I said, if you didn't know it was real, you would think this was sort of a B-grade horror film. Here we are in the KGB hospital with a poor man who's awake whilst having his head cut open with a Bosch drill. It really does sound like something, you would read, as I said, as a pulp fiction.
Jeffrey Smith is with us. He directed and produced The English Surgeon. This coming Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, he's going to be on hand for a free screening followed by a question and answer session. There's also going to be a screening on Monday night. For details, go to our website, KUER.org/Radio West, or you can contact the Salt Lake City Film Center. All of this, by the way, is going to be happening at the Salt Lake City Public Library. We need to take another brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are profiling Jeffrey Smith's powerful documentary, The English Surgeon, which is going to be screened by the Salt Lake City Film Center this weekend. We'll tell you more about that as we go along. Jeffrey Smith is joining us today from a studio in Los Angeles, California. Jeffrey Smith, is it right to say that Henry Marsh is haunted by his experience with a little girl he treated years ago, Tanya? I've seen it described that way, haunted. Is it right to say that?
I would agree with you. He says that he's operated on many children and many tragically have died. But this child stands out. And part of that reason is a very practical part of the reason is that he brought Tanya over from Ukraine with her mother, Katya. And he had to do two long operations. The first one was successful. The second one, tragically, was where things went wrong. And if I say they went wrong, I don't mean that he or anybody else made a mistake. This is simply the nightmare of neurosurgery, is that things can happen that can very quickly escalate into a problem. So despite these enormously good efforts on the part of both he and Igor, who was there in that archive footage that Henry and himself and other assistants shot back at the time, Tanya's left disabled. And Tanya and Katya were in his hospital for 6 months. Mm. So every day when he did his ward round, he would see them. And he became extremely close, as anyone would, to that situation. And he had them over for Christmas and was things. And even though there was very little shared language, it burnt a hole in his psyche, really. I mean, and it was one of... For him, it was one of the first times where he confronts in his working life the very real limits of his godlike powers, because they can also turn, obviously, against you. And in this case, that's what's happened. So Tanya eventually went back to Kiev first, where she stayed another couple of months in Igor's hospital, and then she went back home. And tragically, it's called the shunt. It's a sort of drainage system in the brain the surgeons leave behind an operation. And that was blocked and she died. And he'd always wanted to go to see Katya, the mother, and in a sense make peace with that whole process. But he felt somewhat scared about going. And also Igor was much less sentimental about it than him and always had more patience for him to see. So he never got round to it. And he said to me, look, he said, I'd like to go if you wanted to come. And he said, I would prefer that we went with the cameras because that will, he said, prevent him from becoming too upset. So instead of the filmmaker using the thing as an easy trick, in a way he used my presence to at least go there, and he thought, try and maintain composure. Because what's beautiful about it is that Katya indeed loves him for trying.
Yeah.
And this is the whole point. He says earlier in the film that hope is the most precious thing that we can give. And he gave that to Katya. Despite the outcome, he gave them something. But of course, as a surgeon, he then wrestles with the dilemma of whether he should and shouldn't have. And it's an eternal dilemma. It comes up again and again and again through the film. And it comes up at its most haunting in a modern sense is when he deals with the blonde girl later in the story. So haunted is a good word. He would not disagree with me. And yet it's at the very, very heart of his humanity.
Here's another excerpt then from Geoffrey Smith's film, The English Surgeon.
What I'm thinking most about, actually, is going to see Tanya's mother. And you might say, why do I want to go and see the mother of a child who died several years ago? And I've had many patients who have died, many of them children. And I don't quite know the answer, but I just know I want to go and see Katya. I think about her and Tanya very often. I suppose because there was so much about hope, and hope, failed hope, really.
And there again, that idea of hope comes up again, and failed hope. I mean, that's it seems like that's one of the most important themes that you get in this question of, well, should we at all? And it's what's amazing is he almost seems at times, Henry Marsh, sort of grappling with this sense of guilt. Should we do something, or should we just leave things alone? Maybe it might be better. And as you say, that goes on and on and on in his mind. You can see it. You can see it in his eyes, and you can, you can get a sense of it as he talks.
He knows more than anybody that by delving into the brain, and he puts this very succinctly. He says, "Look, I'm operating on your thoughts and feelings. I'm not just operating on your knees or your toes or your kidneys." And he says, if something goes wrong, he says, I can destroy you. I can leave you with a different personality. I can leave you with an inability to think or reason or feel. And he says, in essence, that's worse than death. And there's a whole collection of people in one of the local nursing homes that are the victims, the wrecks of operations gone wrong. And their families no longer recognize them. They themselves don't recognize who they are. And that haunts, that deeply haunts Henry. So, of course, the responsibility that invests you with as a surgeon is both exhilarating when you can save a life, but you also have to live with the fact that you're not going to save everybody. And he's much he's much younger than he looks, and that's an evidence of the simple fact that he does profoundly worry about his patients. I often ask audience members, you know, how old do they think Henry is? And people often think he's into his 70s. He was actually just 57 when the film was shot. So he is an example of a man who wears his heart on his sleeve and wrestles with these eternal dilemmas. And it's the beauty of it that he lets us into that. And there's one particular scene in the film with the blonde girl where that comes all to a head, I suppose, where they run out of the ability to know what to do.
Right. I want to talk about that in a moment, but I wanted to also mention this scene where, you know, Henry Marsh, he maintains his composure for the most part throughout the film, almost always. But there's this moment where you see a bit of tension between Henry and Igor as they're talking about the Mary getting prepared for the delicate surgery on Marion. And there's a bit of stress or conflict anyway that emerges. And it's the first time we actually see Henry cross with Igor. And you realize that Igor maybe he's pushing it. And Henry wants him to make sure that they realize the risks that are involved.
Absolutely.
Let's play that section from the film.
You do realize this is a very big, serious case, don't you? The one we're going to do now.
Yes, Henry.
And the patient.
The risky surgery.
And the patient realizes it.
The problem is that if you run successful clinic,
So nobody realized how risky surgery can be.
I know, but you've got to tell them. I mean, I'm not in the
I told them. I told them, right. But they replied good results. We asked many patients, so we suggest that.
Yeah, but with simpler, smaller tumors. This is a terrible big tumor.
You became less enthusiastic with years.
Well, no crap! It's not that. It's just you're giving me more and more difficult. You're showing me more and more difficult operations. That's the problem. That's what it's about. You know, every time I come, you show me a bloody more dangerous operation.
But you told that we should step by step make progress.
Yeah, but one day we're going to make a step too far. Oops. Bloody Cossacks.
Ukrainian.
It's a terrific aside there, but that's a powerful scene. It's the first time you see that tension break between them.
Yes, and it's evidence of the teacher knowing more than the student, because naivety, you know, is a blessing. Mm-hmm. Igor doesn't truly yet comprehend the gravity of what's happening because he hasn't lost a patient, hasn't had somebody die on the table. Whereas Henry's had many of those experiences. So that's what you're dealing with there. Henry becomes a different person just before the operation and certainly during the operation, a very different sort of person.
It's that excitement and that fierce joy, as he calls it.
Yes, he's just literally a minute or 30 less than that after you heard him say bloody Cossacks, he's in the changing room, the second one, and he's saying, look, well, now I'm calmed down a bit because I remember the love of operating, as he calls it, the blood sport. Mm. And it's a beautiful confession because we see a man who's just like with his woodwork, he's in love with the challenge, the risk of getting it right, the beauty of operating under difficult conditions. And as he says, he calls it... in a way, he says, well, it is like a Cossack activity, brave Ukrainian heroism, he says. Mm. And it's a delightful insight into sort of the mixed motivations. He says it's not all altruism. He says there's something in it for me.
One of the most – you referred earlier to one of the most powerful moments in the film, a scene during one of these endless days of surgical consultations. And this lovely young woman comes in, blonde, 23 years old. She's been having – difficulty. She believes that all of this may be the result of a tick bite, but looking at the X-ray or the scan, Henry Marsh sees something else. He sees a tumor, and the prognosis is not good. Here's another scene from Geoffrey Smith's film, The English Surgeon.
What is her future?
Not good. You cannot remove the tumor by surgery because it is too extensive.
What can we advise her?
Well, I nothing, I think, is the honest answer. I think what would I do in London? Well, we'd do a biopsy operation and then I'd refer her to my oncological colleagues. But, you know, the prognosis is not a good one.
How many years it will take?
I would have thought less than five. She'll probably go blind first from papal edema, but I don't know if it's appropriate to tell her that or not.
She said that maybe it is a viral infection because she was bitten
by an insect.
Yeah. Encephalitis. Mm. Is it possible? Less
is unlikely, but if that belief gives us some hope and happiness, maybe it's better to stick with that possibility.
Geoffrey Smith, I think I didn't say the most important part about that scene. She's sitting right there.
That's right. She doesn't speak English.
Yeah.
And for the sake of people who are thinking, oh my goodness, how can we possibly broadcast this type of thing? She is very aware now of her situation, and B, she's very aware of the film. So that's most important to realize. But this is one of those very deeply unsettling scenes where we are with the surgeons. We're looking at this beautiful young girl, these big eyes, who is completely unaware of what is happening in front of her. And they, as Henry says there, he says, well, maybe it's just best to leave her with the idea that this is some sort of viral infection caused by a tick, because what they're struggling with is how on earth do they communicate the truth to her. She's on her own, and dare I say, by law in Ukraine, you can't give that sort of news to somebody for good reasons. I mean, you can't tell someone they're going to be dead in 3 years' time and then let them walk out and, you know, be hit by a bus because they're in such a dazed and confused and upset state. So there is a good reason why they can't. But what they recognize is at some point they're going to have to. And indeed, that's what happened later outside the filming period. She comes back with her mother and sister. By the way, she was already blind by the time she came back 7 months later. So I'm afraid Henry's diagnosis is accurate. And the reason to include the film is to show us and to ask ourselves what on earth we would do. Would we fudge it? Would we continue, in essence, to lie to her? Or do we think that telling her at some point is the right option? There's no answers. There's no easy answers. And they themselves say they don't know what to do. These two grown men, powerful, you know, who've seen a great deal of pain and suffering, simply run out of options. And I think that's very important to realize that. It helps educate us as patients, and that's particularly what Henry Marsh wanted to do with the film.
Jeffrey Smith. He directed and produced The English Surgeon. This coming Sunday at 2 o'clock, he's going to be on hand for a free screening at the downtown Salt Lake City Library. For details, call the Salt Lake City Film Center or go to our website, KUER.org/Radio West. Jeffrey Smith joined us from a studio in Los Angeles. And Mr. Smith, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. Just to say, Nick Cave and Warren Ellis did the soundtrack as well. So if there are any Nick Cave fans in Salt Lake City, they should come along to the screening because the music is wonderful.
It is indeed. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program directed by Mike Anderson, produced by Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.